Session number 21117, Rule 3.
Albert Gregory, Rule 3.
We'd be looking for the D zone, the dropping zones, and we'd find those usually without any bother. And we'd get rid of the supplies. I'd be instructed by the pilot as he was sort of approaching the dropping zone, which was a clearing cut in the forest. And I would just get rid of the supplies out of the door. I used to have a monkey chain, what they call a monkey chain. I was strapped with this chain from the roof of the inside of the aircraft so that I wouldn't fall out. Because I would be operating at this open door. And as I say, we had no parachutes in the aircraft at any time, on any flight. If we weren't dropping supplies in the jungle, we'd be troop carrying, moving troops from one part of Malaya to another. And on occasions, soldiers would say to us, "Where's our parachute?" They say, "We don't have parachutes in this aircraft." So of course that was causing a bit of trouble. They weren't very happy about having no parachutes. But I said, "Well, if you can find a parachute, I'll have it before you." We flew all the time, any distance, any destination, and we never had a parachute in our aircraft. Apart from doing the cooperation with the army in the jungle in Malaya, I used to fly up to Hong Kong, taking troops up there, who were stationed up there, and they'd go up there for leave for them for a rest, away from the jungle. We'd fly down to Australia, taken some of the Dakotas that had to have the major refit at Adelaide. I got over to New Zealand. I flew all over the Far East. And where I flew to in and out of 90 different airfields in England, I also flew into and out of between 50 and 60 airfields in the Far East. I was out there for just over 2.5 years. My family joined me. They were in my quarters in Changi. My 2.5 years came to an end, and I was told I got to go back to England. I said, "Well, I'd like to stay out here if possible." We were enjoying it. My family were enjoying it. I was enjoying it.
Why?
I was quite happy doing what I was doing. The conditions were good. I was living in a nice bungalow at Changi with my wife and children. When I was not flying, there was plenty of good life in the mess and all that sort of thing, parties and all the rest of it. We knew plenty of friends, many others, officers with their wives and families. But my request for staying out there was told, "No, you can't stay out here. We've got a waiting list in England. People wanted to come out here." So I came back on a troop ship with my wife and two children, 28 days from Singapore to Liverpool.
It seems from your logbook that you left England for Singapore in March 1948.
Yes, I went back into the Air Force late 47. Of course, we're doing these courses, refresher courses. It'll be that time before I was actually posted. I flew out. I flew out as a passenger in a York aircraft to Changi from Lynham. And I was out there for about a year before I had the opportunity to get my wife out there. She went out on a troop ship with two babies, 28 days, joining me in Changi. And of course, at the end of the tour, we all came back together on a troop ship.
Did you ever feel in danger, or that your family was in danger in
Malaya? No, not at any time.
Did you ever feel that you were shot at from the ground?
No. When we used to fly from Changi to Hong Kong, Kai Tak, we used to land at what was known as, in those days, as Saigon, which was in what they call French Indochina, and there was a war going on out there at that time. We'd land at Saigon to refuel. It would take us 4 or 5 hours to get from Changi to Saigon. We'd refuel, but we weren't allowed to leave the aircraft because there was a war going on around the time, and there was aircraft and anything to do with war going in the immediate vicinity. We weren't even allowed to get away from the aircraft when we landed. We landed purely for refueling. We'd refuel and take off to go to Qatar. That was another 4 or 5 hours. I on those trips was a wireless operator, getting messages in Morse code, getting fixes for the observer, for the navigation. That was my main job on those trips, as a wireless operator.
Did you feel any sense of danger in those trips to Indochina?
No. We were not involved. To my knowledge, we're just what you call plain sailing. But I used to get up to Hong Kong quite frequently, mainly taking troops or bringing troops back. We'd only stay there one night, one or two nights at the most, and come back.
Were there any disadvantages to serving in Malaya, or things that you didn't like about it?
No. Initially, when my wife first and with the children first arrived, I had to have what they call civilian accommodation. I had to find somewhere to live in the vicinity of the airfield. I did not have my headquarters initially. The conditions that we had to live in under were not very good. But that only happened for a few weeks, because very shortly after the family arrived, we got in this situation, offered a nice bungalow in the grounds of the Changi airfield. And we moved there, and from then it was a matter of happy ever after.
How did you get on with the local population in Malaya?
Well, the language difficulty, of course, was very, very bad. I mean, there was very few people could speak very little English. And we had a servant, what they call an armour, who used to do all the work in the... We weren't allowed to do anything. It was a lady, a Chinese lady. She'd get very annoyed if my wife attempted to do anything. She'd do all the cleaning and all the cooking. So life, of course, particularly from my family's point of view, was quite good. But during that time, even when they were there, I was away for some weeks at a time, because the three squadrons would take it in turns to be actually stationed at Kuala Lumpur. So they were nearer to where the troops were in the forest.
How did you recruit this armour?
I didn't recruit her personally. She was just given to us through the Air Force. And the only times, from an interest point of view, the only time I personally ever wore a revolver in all my Air Force career was when we were posted from Changi, Singapore, to Kuala Lumpur. And we were then in the middle of the terrorist activity area, so we had to carry a revolver. And that was the only time during my service career where I was personally armed.
Did you ever run into any trouble?
No trouble at all, no.
How did this lady, the armour, perform as a servant?
Very good. She'd just do everything, but the difficulty was, of course, we couldn't talk to each other, because she knew virtually nothing of English, and I certainly didn't know their language. But we got on quite well. As long as she sort of would shoo my wife or anybody away if they appeared to want to do anything. She wanted to be responsible of everything, keeping the place clean, doing all the cooking, and that was it, which we were quite happy to let her do.
When did you come out of the RAF?
Well, I was posted back to England. And from then on, I was a ground instructor. I finished the first 4 years of extended service commission and volunteered for a further extended service, which I got for another 4 years. And then in 1954-55, when I was getting near the end of the second four-year period, I applied for a permanent commission to stay in the Air Force. But again, unfortunately for me, that coincided with when they were having another one of the clear-outs of the services. So the situation where people like me was not required to any great extent, and I was getting near to the time where a few more years would have meant I could have got a pension. So I'm afraid, despite my requests to try and stay in the Air Force, I was again booted out, for a word. So I left the Air Force in May 1955. But for the last four years, the last period of the Extended Service Commission, I was the ground instructor.
What rank did you finish with?
I was still the same rank, flight lieutenant. I was awarded the DFC in 1943. And while I was out in Malaya, the word came through that I was to get the Air Efficiency Award. I'd done 10 years flying from the Volunteer Reserve days.
Can I just go back to the AI work that you were doing on night flying? You described the equipment that you had. Were you happy with the working of the equipment?
Well, initially, no. Initially, of course, it's the same with everything else, that the equipment was poor and liable to give a lot of headaches. But as the time went on, as the weeks and months went by, we'd keep getting Mark 1, Mark 2, Mark 3, Mark 4, etc. And by the time we got to that stage, the equipment was very reliable and very good, very effective.
Was it any kind of strain using it?
No. No, it was very good. It was just looking like a small television screen, cathode ray tube, I think. And the course, the training that I had, I didn't go away to any unit to train. I was trained on the equipment, on the squadron, at the time I was there.
And the equipment was in your cockpit, more or less on your lap?
No, it was fixed stationary in the aircraft, and I would look at it. It was permanently fixed, not on my lap, no.
I don't mean loose on your lap, but I mean about level with your lap.
Oh, yes. Well, chest high, yes. Regarding the AI, the aircraft interception, the radar, they got to the stage where it was used extensively on night fighters. And by that time, individuals were sent to a school to do a course on AI operating, as I call it, aircraft interception. But initially with me, I was involved with it when it first came out. So we were just trained as the days and nights went by on the squadron.
Was there any one part of your war which you liked best?
I enjoyed not doing the war. Doing the war just came and went. And to be quite honest, I just took it as it came and I enjoyed it. And but post-war, of course, when I was posted to the Far East, we enjoyed that because I had my family with me.
Was there any part of your war service which you disliked particularly?
No, I had plenty of near escapes, quite a number of occasions, particularly referring back to the Bolton Paul Defiant days in 1940 when I left 141 Squadron. On another occasion, I was flying in the Blenheim over London doing a night flying test, and I saw three aircraft to the rear of where we were flying. I couldn't recognise who they were, or what they were. I couldn't identify. And I said to my pilot, there's three aircraft, fighter aircraft, in the distance behind us, but I can't see myself. We used to have a lot of identification work on the ground to identify aircraft. I said, I couldn't identify his aircraft. He said, well, keep an eye on them and just let me know what happens. Well, these aircraft gradually came nearer and nearer, until one of the three attacked us. And from that day to this, I can remember the bullets hitting our aircraft like hailstones on a tin roof. But fortunately, this one aircraft out of the three only gave one short burst, because they obviously suddenly realised that we were a friend and not a foe. When we got down to the ground, We got down to the ground quite safe, no problem. We weren't hit too badly. Of course, there was big uproar and weird complaints from us that we were fired at by three hurricanes. And it turned out that these three hurricanes were off a Polish squadron who were stationed in the London area. And despite our, of course, our protests, they said, well, it's words to the effect, well, it's too bad. As far as we're concerned, if we see an aircraft in the sky, we'll never get it. But there were Polish, there was a Polish squadron. And that was, of course, another one of my near misses.
But as far as the Defiant was concerned, you never went into action in the Defiant.
No, I flew in it, but I did not get involved because I was posted before they did their first operational flight, as I say, at Hawkins in Kent. I was then on 219 back on Blenheims at Catterick. I was operational on Blenheims, Beaufighters, Havocs, Bostons, Ansons, Walrus, Sea Otters, Lysanders and Dakotas.
I don't think you said anything about your work with Havocs. If you can say something about them, please.
Well, the Havocs and the Bostons were the same squadron that I've been referring to when I was on Night Intruders. They were the same aircraft. Some referred to as Havocs and some referred to as Bostons, but it was during that period when I was on Night Intruders.
I found the place in your logbook where it mentions the Heinkel 111 that was confirmed destroyed, and it says March the 12th.
I think that was 1941, I think.
But it also says in that entry, X-rayed. What was an X-rayed?
Are we referring to when I was in the Beaufighter?
Yes, this is Beaufighter work, yeah.
Well, X-ray was always referred to when some of their aircraft had come over bombing over here and probably were returning.
Going back to the incident with the Polish hurricanes, when do you think that was?
It was during the Battle of Rittentime, I think in the autumn, September, around that area. And we were doing a night flying test, what they call an NFT. If you were flying at night, if you're going to be on duty, on call, you had to do a night flying test. The pilot would fly a particular aircraft, and me, the wireless operator, air gunner, and we'd have to sort of accept the fact that the aircraft was serviceable or not. So then we would be allocated to that aircraft, and if our presence was required on any particular trip, we'd go off.
And so you'd have been in a Blenheim at that time?
I was in a Blenheim.
And so the Polish hurricanes couldn't recognise a Blenheim?
Their aircraft recognition was at fault. Until they got right in firing range. But fortunately, as I say, only one aircraft made a short burst before they veered off.
I think you've got some statistics from your logbook concerning your own service.
I have.
In the war.
I have, yes. Well, I've got a few statistics here for very interest. That during my RAF career, I actually flew operational from different airfields in England and the Far East to over 145 airfields, either landing at for some particular reason or operating from operationally. And I actually flew on 25 different aircraft, and I flew operational on 8 different squadrons, and a total of roughly 230 operational flights during my service career. That covers the war, 1939-45, and this other war that was going on in the Far East, because that was a war. The Jungle War was going on there for about 10 to 12 years, with the army fighting in the jungle. And all the those flights that we did on Dakotas were classed as operational flights. As I say, during the summer of 1940, which was my particular busy time in the Battle of Britain, I was actually airborne 169 times between the middle of May and the end of September. Anything between 1 and 6 times a day.